Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Only for you, when you think you're about to give up, yeah, just read your Bible, it'll tell you what to do. Be not weary, in doing well, for in due season, you're gonna reap, yeah, say be not weary, in doing well, for in due season, you're gonna reap now.
Well, good morning, good morning, good morning to you Blog Talk listeners. I bring you greetings from Granny's Place this morning. I will be your host, Sister LaShondra Lewis, today, along with our president, Sister Beverly Beasley of Granny's Place. Today on our show, we're going to be talking with Ms. Tanja Barnes, who is a president and founder of the Living Life After Divorce organization. She's going to come to us this morning and give us some information on her organization. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're blessed.
All right. First of all, I'm sorry. I would like to give a shout out to our pastors, Michael Morgan Sr. of the Shady Grove Primitive Baptist Church, and to Pastor Richard Terry of the First Free Will Baptist Church. These are our sponsors also, along with Granny's Place. So, Ms. Barnes, would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself and give us some information on your organization?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Tanja Barnes, and again, I am the CEO, one of the CEO and founders of Living Life After Divorce. Living Life After Divorce is an information and resource center for divorcees with families, and we do counseling for the women as well as children. We also have counseling for those that's married. Going through this process can be challenging. And one of the things we learned, which helped us start the organization, was when I was going through my situation, I learned that there wasn't a lot of resources out there for African-American women. And when growing up, we was always kind of taught that you kind of suck it up and, you know, you really don't talk to anyone. So when I was going through the process and it became a struggle, and I was out there in the community trying to find a location so I can get counseling, turn into the pastors, I found that there wasn't any resources really for African American. So with that, with my counterpart, and she went through a similar situation, we decided that we needed to educate the women, to our African American women, to let them know that it is okay to talk to someone. We have our higher being, God, and we go to Him, but we also need that other support for people that He made as well, for us, for them to have the education to be able to talk to us. And so with that, we started this organization, and again, we provide counseling. We also have resources to help the ladies and families fill out legal documents and things of that nature to proceed with the divorce, as well as, again, giving counseling to those that are married, some things that they can do to try to strengthen their marriage, because it is important if you can keep that unity together, to hold it together. And we have locations in Southern California, which is where I'm located, and we also have a location in Dallas, Texas.
Okay, who is the head in Dallas, Texas?
Deborah Gladney.
Deborah,
she would be the
Gladney
contact person in Dallas.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have how often do you counsel these women, or what are the procedures that you go to in order to get these people involved in the organization, or how would they contact you?
We have weekly counseling sessions. They would need to contact DeBoer, or they can get the information off our website for the day and times. But they are offered weekly here in Southern California. We offer it twice a week in the evenings. We're currently working on a schedule to provide it in the morning. And the contact number that you can do to find out further information is 877-785-8434, or they can visit our website at www.livinglifeafterdivorce.com.
Okay, and there is someone available at all times to answer those lines and any questions that we might have concerning the program?
Yes, we do. That 800 number is a 24/7 message center, and someone will call you back less than 5 minutes. And we do have urgency numbers where you can dial directly. And if you want to dial direct, again, for Southern California, it's going to be 626-272-8702, and for the Texas location, it would be 214-668-5325.
Wonderful. Beverly, do you have any questions for Ms. Barnes? Beverly?
Yeah. When you were talking about when you were doing your divorce, going through your situation, you didn't find any facilities available. I'm trying to think of how to way to put this question. I know I went through a divorce, and there wasn't anyone to talk to. So when someone calls your office and says, I'm going through a divorce and things are a little bit difficult, what type of assistance? Do they just talk to someone? What actually do you guys do?
Well, an assessment when they first call. Again, seeing their situation, if they're in the middle of it, because there's different phases that you go through. You get to a point where you're in your marriage, and you become a very emotional being. So sometimes you make a impulse decision, and it may not be what you really want to do. So by doing that, we do an assessment for about 15 to 20 minutes, allowing that person to open up and tell you what their situation is. And again, okay, it's case by case. So once you get the core of their issue, it may be something that you can walk them through, and they'll be willing to go to counseling. And this is why we turn to now doing couples. In the beginning, it was just the individual process when the woman is actually gone from the marriage. But there are things that you can do to counsel while you're in that marriage to help you stay in that situation. If they have already left the home, again, it's a great possibility. But there is statistics that show 65% of women that do leave the situation, and if they're the one that made the decision to leave, they do not go back. So if they're that far along, then, of course, it's a help getting past the grievance process because, again, it's so many different levels and teaching them how to deal with their issues and emotions that they're going through and if they have children, as well as to pay attention to your children, because don't just assume that they don't know what's going on, because children are very much aware. So it's different stages in which we counsel the individual.
Okay, when you said you're doing the husband and the wife now, because sometimes it's necessary, are the husbands, once they get into the counseling and everything, are they willing, or do you find that you get a lot of resistance from the husband when they come into this type of program?
I would say with my experience, and in the past 2 years, we've been open for 2 years now, I would say 35% of the men that come through are willing.
Okay.
Especially if the women have taken that initiative to move out and they want to save their marriage, they're open to doing it. But if they have already checked out, and what I mean by that is if they have already went through that process through their mind that this is not what they want, there's nothing that this person can do to keep me here, then they're not going to stay.
Okay, because they've already gone, mentally they've already gone on.
Already checked out, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Are a lot of these women, are they coming from abuse situations, which has prompted the divorce, or is it where they're just, perhaps there was infidelity?
It's all of it. It's all of it. Across the board. You find some that we had one person that come through our doors, and she was married for 20 years, and she was just tired. She wanted a change in her life. She had been through all of that. But by the time her husband got to the point where he wanted to be a husband, she was, you know, fed up. And again, in her mind, she had checked out. She had done all she could do. The kids were older, and she just wanted more for herself. So you have a, there's a variety of reasons why people go through divorce and find themselves in these situations. And we have experienced most of them.
I'm listening when you said like she had been married for 20 years and decided to check out. That's happening a lot these days because women at one time would stay in a marriage regardless of what it was going on in the marriage where she was unhappy or whatever, and they would stay. But now you're hearing of women, not only in Caucasian but black, leaving marriages after 20 or 25 years. Do those women have a harder time adjusting to it than a woman that's been maybe married maybe 5 years or something?
Yes, you do, because when you're going through a divorce, you're losing a part of yourself. And for those individuals that's been married for 20 and 30 years, you are truly joined at the hip. So it's just like you cutting off one of your limbs at this point. You've learned to know this person in every aspect, the good and the bad. You learn to accept and tolerate most of their behavior, but then you get to a point where I need to heal. I got to cut this off. And it's devastating. It does take a lot longer. And then they're older. And what I notice in a lot of the older women that go through this process, it's much harder because you look at life realistically for what it is, where when they're younger, they just go day by day. They don't think that they're going to get to a certain part of their life, or they just don't care. They live carefree. But when they're older, I notice that everything is taken to heart. They look at the fact that they are maturing, and they thought that they should be one place in life, and so they look at the setback or the disappointment, and will they ever get there, and the clock is ticking. Will I find somebody else? And there's just so many other challenges that they focus on rather than the situation itself, which is to heal you first. Once you're healed, you will be a better you to be able to go out there and focus and realize the person that God has sent for you or have for you. And it just changes your mindset as you get older because you're focused on so many other things that really not important, because you can find love at any age. I worked at this one center, and we had this young lady that was 80 years old, when I say young, and she had got married for the first time at 75. So it just goes to show you could find love at any age. But when you go in through that process, you just focus on the now and how I feel, and you get caught up in all the myths out there. Once you get over 40 or 50, it's hard to find love, or you won't find anybody, your clock is ticking, and all those things that they focus on instead of the moment to get past, because you truly have to take it sometimes minute by minute and day by day to get through this process.
Yeah, it's got to be tremendously hard to do that, particularly when you've been married to somebody for 25, 30 years. You just, I think the most dramatic part about that is that you think you know where your life is headed and you know this person. And you're starting to change as you go on, because women change a lot from our 20s to our 50s. But to see the man not change, it has to be heartbreaking, particularly when you've waited all these years to hope that he would change and be what you, well, be your husband, instead of just, for some of them, it's just like having a roommate and not a husband. What? Tell me a little bit more about the healing process. You've mentioned it several times, but how does that healing process work in through your program? What do the women actually do other than just the counseling? What do they do after that in your program?
Well, the healing is part of the counseling, but there's different phases that you go through as far as that emotional part of blame. You go through blaming yourself and why me, what I could have done different. instead of just looking at it for it's not me, it's this person. Yes, you played a role in it, but it was this person's decision to either leave the marriage or to do whatever action that they have taken. So once you get through that phase, then you go through a phase of who am I? What do I like? Because a lot of us, when we're in a relationship, we lose ourselves. We get caught up into what our mate like because we think that's what's going to make us happy because that's what they love to do and that's what makes them happy. When you're in a, when you first meet someone, you know, you have your individual life, they have theirs. As we grow, we tend as women to lose ourselves and get into their lives. So you have to rediscover yourself, find out what it is that I like, what do I like to do, what once drove me. And then once you go through that phase, you will be able to heal because you will identify yourself and be able to do some of those things that once made you happy, and you focus on those things more than the negative that's in your life.
Okay, so you become Belinda, not Mrs. Belinda James. You actually once again become Belinda, that woman who has her own desires, her own likes, her own dislikes, and you take on your character traits and not your character traits and his.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Tanja, what is success rate that you have with these women? Do you have a follow-up program with them, or do they come back and tell you, thank you for helping me, and how everything went after they're out of the program?
We do have a follow-up program. For the most part, they're with us for as long as it takes, pretty much, because we start out with a six-week session, and if they continue, if they choose to continue, then, of course, they will come back. And 9 times out of 10, they do, because they see the growth and the healing within themselves. And so we do what we call an exit interview, and it's basically some of the same questions that we ask when coming in, you know, how are you feeling? How do you feel this program, you know, has helped you? And have there's any significant changes that have been made. And so with their feedback, and again, with them letting us know where they are at this point, if they are in a different stage, because when they came in, they were at a crisis situation where they didn't feel that they could go on, and some of them even wanted to commit suicide. And then we see if they're graduated to a stable situation where now, you know, they're focused, they could hold a job. And again, that's another thing. A lot of these women do not have jobs, and we do have resources for that to help them get back on their feet and give them a skill, work with different centers to give them a skill if they don't, to get them back out in the workforce to help them be independent. And then to see once they become stable, then if they're thriving, if they're able to go out there and start all over again and make sure that their mindset is right and they're focused on the right things.
How wonderful. How wonderful that is. But now, Tanja, we know that you have to run off on us this morning. We wish we could hold you a little longer. But would you please go ahead and give us your website address again and the numbers where you can be reached in California and in Dallas?
Sure. The website is www.livinglifeafterdivorce.com. And we have the 800 number, and that's 877-785-8434, and that will reach either Southern California or Dallas, Texas. The number to reach DeBoer Gladney, which is the counselor in Texas, is 214-668-5325. And again, here in Southern California, myself, Tanja, that number would be 626-272-8702. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. We learned a lot this morning.
Yes, that was very, very interesting, and we hope that we can utilize your services at Granny's Place. And it was one question that I just needed to ask you, and it was about the children. What is the turnover rate for the children? Do they do you have counsel for them, and how do the children go through the process, and what are their usual responses?
The assessment that we do for the children is pretty much the same, of course, allowing them to open up and express their feelings. The success rate, I would say about 80%, because we do have those that are not willing to talk. And I notice those are more of the teenagers. They're not willing to talk. They've been in their situation, and that's all they know. So what was once familiar with them is broken and gone, and their anger towards both people, the parents, and they blame themselves a lot. Where I notice the younger age group, I would say probably 11 and under, they're kind of carefree, and they're more open to talk about the situation. But we do notice the teens are a little more tougher to kind of break through and get in their psyche.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. At least we're able to do something with the children and help them understand what is really happening in their lives also as they have to deal with the situations. That's a wonderful thing to have somebody there for them. Can I just do one thing right quick? We have our host on the line. Brother Joel Lewis, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning to you and your guest.
Good morning. Would you like to have a question or make a comment, sir?
No, but I do want to make a comment. I am enjoying the topic and the discussion that's going on this morning, and it's a worthwhile discussion. As we go through the challenges of life and the difficulties, it's always good to know that we have resources and we have things in place to help us through those times, even though your topic is talking about women's issues. But those things are abroad, you know, they affect all our lives. Because as a family, what affects the woman also affects the man also.
Amen.
You're right.
You're right. We know that you are affected during these times. Well, we thank you for your call. Tangi, we thank you for coming on this morning, and we're sorry that you have to leave us, and I'm going to want to hold you any longer because I promised you a serving time. So I want you to have a wonderful day, and again, we say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, have a wonderful day, and we will talk later.
Thank you. You
all right,
too, ladies.
Listeners. Bye-bye. Goodbye. Have a good day.
Bye.
Listeners, you have just been informed about living life after divorce. What a wonderful topic. We have a number that you can call in at 310-982-4126 if you would like to have a comment, and we can give you the numbers again if you missed them for living life after divorce. What a wonderful, wonderful information that we've gotten this morning. Beverly, do you have any comments?
No, I think that was really good because what she said about older women getting divorced, you know, years ago you never thought about older women didn't get divorced. They just stayed in it and just dealt with whatever it was. But now women are waking up, I guess that's what they would call it. But now women are saying that they're no longer wanting to be in relationships where there's no growth, there's no understanding, being treated as though they're like a piece of furniture or something, and they're deciding to leave. And I know that that's got to be a most difficult thing to do, to be in a marriage for 25, 30 years and decide that you want to, well, somewhat, I guess, feeling forced or whatever, that you just got to leave this because there's nothing left in the marriage. And that's got to be a heartbreaking, traumatic decision to do something like that, particularly when you've been Mrs. whatever for 30 years and that's the only life you've known, to make such a dramatic decision in one's life has got to be sad. And I guess in some ways it could be exciting, but in other ways it can be very sad to know that you're going to start your life all over again, particularly when you're talking about 50 and 60-year-old women doing that again. I don't know about that part about finding new love, because if it were me, I think I'd be saying that's the end of that. I'm not looking for anything else. I don't think I'd want to get in another relationship. Not after 30 years with one person. I just couldn't see doing that.
But there are some people, you know, that think that they have to have someone else in their lives and they don't like being lonely. I've heard stories about that, about women who cannot just, they just can't live alone, and they need somebody like a man makes them. And I'm glad that we have Living Life After Divorce to tell them that they have to find out about themselves, where they don't have to have somebody else to validate them. Because
That's what it seems like. They're feeling the need to be validated, and another human being has to be the one to do it.
That's correct. Yeah, I think that would call for a woman with a very poor esteem for herself.
Yeah.
Because if you need someone to validate you, well, there is definitely an issue with you and yourself, because the Bible tells us that we don't have to have, we're all God's children, and he will take care of us. He will do what we need him to do for us to bring us back into life, into living. So I'm glad that it is a biblically-based organization where they teach them out of the Word of God also. So that's just real wonderful. I've enjoyed the topic, and I just hopefully that we'll have some women to, you know, get in on it and talk to the Deborah here in Texas or either Tangi in California, because I know a lot of women that need this healing. They need healing.
Oh, yeah. I think the other part of what she was saying about the teens, teens reacting to divorce, I think teens don't like a lot of change. One of their biggest problems is they're trying to figure out who they are. And when you have that big change in the house, it like it kind of knocks them off the scale. They're not sure what's going on in their life anymore. They're already having the difficulty of trying to figure out if they're a child today or if they're a young adult tomorrow. And then to wake up and the whole house has changed, the dynamics of the house have changed. For a teenager, that's got to be a traumatic situation to have to go through that and wake up, dad's not there anymore.
Especially on the boys, because the boys then feel like that they might need to jump in and help mom and be the man and do the things that the father should do without him, and especially if he's not going to be a continued part of the life. Well, that's hard on them too. I think girls adapt a little easier, but it's the males that have the problems, you know, that they don't know, well, am I going to have to be the man? Or, you know, if you have those strong-willed children that want to be, you know, there for their moms and do the things that the dad should have done, that's going to be the issue for them, you know. So I'm glad that we can have someone to talk to them also and tell them, well, you know, you can stay in your place as a teenager.
You don't have to try and be an adult.
Right.
In a teen spot.
Right.
Yeah.
You live your life. And some kids think it's their fault that the dad left or things happening with them, you know, is their fault. But that's, you know, I'm glad they're there.
It's a real hard situation to deal with. And I think the most difficult one probably for that organization is probably those teens and the young kids who don't want to talk. Who are so angry that they're, and then, you know, I don't know kids if they still do it, but used to be a time they used to blame mom for him leaving. She had to have done something for him not to want to stay.
Right. Well, let me see. We have a caller on the line.
All right.
Hello, caller.
Hello. Hi, this is Yvonne.
Hi, Yvonne.
How you doing?
Today? I'm doing great.
Good morning.
Well, thank you
Good morning.
For calling. Mrs. Beasley is going to go ahead and introduce you, and then we'll get right on the show with you, okay?
Okay.
Well, listen to the audience. This is Yvonne Gonzalez. Ms. Gonzalez is an industrial hygienist with the U.S. Department of Labor Occupational Safety Administration, and she's become one of our new volunteers for Granny's Place. And I asked Mrs. Gonzalez to come on and tell us something about her life as a young woman growing up. Because one of the things that we're interested in is the changes that women face. And Yvonne's going to tell us a little bit about her life when she started going to college and some of the challenges that she faced while she was going through college and then starting her career. Good morning to you. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, wow. I'm really well. It's pretty exciting to be talking with you both.
And, you know, I'm definitely excited to be able to share just a little bit about my story and what prompted me to, you know, just get involved with the community.
Well, go so, right ahead. Tell us about
you're going
Thank
to college.
You for calling.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry, ladies.
Just go ahead and just start where you want to.
Okay, you got it.
For being here. We're excited.
No, I know it's so early. But, no, I grew up in Harlem. I was the oldest of six children and, you know, raised by a single parent. And I always did really well in school. God just blessed me with intelligence. So I wound up doing really well. I got scholarships, a scholarship to go to the premier engineering institution in the United States, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, to all my alum. And God blessed me. I got the opportunity to go there practically free, just based off of good grades. And the fact that my family was poor by economic standards. And so I went to college. I studied chemical engineering, and I graduated. But along the way, unfortunately, my mom passed. She passed my sophomore year in college. And so a decision was put before me, or I felt I needed to make a decision as to whether I would have my siblings come with me or if other family members would take us. And, of course, there's always the unfortunate option of foster care, fortunate and unfortunate. For us, it would have been unfortunate. So through a lot of prayer and talking with many of my friends, those that are very close to me and my minister and his wife and just seeking a lot of advice, I decided to take the children, not all of them, but the ones that wanted to come. You know, came with me, and we moved, which that was just a miracle within itself because we did not have any money. We did not have the resources to do so, but God just continued to open up doors, and one of my very best friends from college was just an extension of me and ran around and was able to help us get all sorts of services from social services, and she was my voice at the campus for campus housing. And within a matter of months, I would say, I was back at school for the fall semester with the family. It was myself, my own daughter, because I had a daughter, and then three of my siblings. And so I was a student full-time at this very competitive school. And it was challenging. It was very, very hard. You know, I couldn't make excuses for, well, I could have, but I couldn't make excuses for not having my work done or not being able to work on projects or not being able to lead certain projects at the university because of what was going on with my personal life. But at the same time, I had to learn how to juggle because I had to learn how to not only be a student, but also be a parent at the same time because the kids were also of school age. When I took my siblings, my baby sister was 2 years old, my baby brother was 6 years old, and my younger brother was 15 years old. And then my daughter at the time was 4 years old. So by the time, you know, they all were in school, I had to get them in daycare and get them in after-school programs. And at the same time, I had to be at school to be able to talk at whatever organization I was leading. I was on the undergraduate council at my school, and I was on executive board there, so I had to make those sort of meetings as well. So at a very young age, I learned how to juggle those. But, it was very, very challenging, and without all the support that I had from people around me, I really wouldn't be the success that I am today. After graduating college, I then pursued my career in chemical engineering. I went on interviews for various jobs and was flown out to different companies, and I wound up working for General Electric for several years before going over into federal service. And then I got a job with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, as a compliance officer. With my background in chemical engineering, that helped.
And so through there, I've had the opportunity to do so many great things and just help people in various situations as far as with the World Trade Center and as well as with what happened with Katrina. So it has been an exciting ride, but and it continues to go. But I was just so grateful for all of those that were around to help me. My success is truly a shared success.
Well, that was a ride. how did you learn how to be a parent at such an early age with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old? I mean, to be just at home dealing with a 2-year and a 4-year-old is enough by itself. With you had a teenager, a young man as a teenager, and then going to school. What were the daily challenges other than getting them up to go to school? What about
Wow. The biggest challenge, daily challenge, was me getting up as well. Because unfortunately, my schedule, you know, in college, you do all-nighters. And at my university, like I said, it was very competitive. So it was very common. A lot of my groups would meet really late, like from 9 to like 2, 3 in the morning. And then the kids had to be on the bus at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. So sometimes I would get home and literally have to sit up in the living room until it was time for them to get up so that they could have their breakfast and make the bus, you know, and get a good start to their day. Yes, how did I learn to be a parent? I think a big part of that came from watching my mother grow up. I mean, watching my mother as I was growing up. And since she was a single mom, I had learned at a young age to do a lot of housely duty. So I learned at a young age to do laundry. I remember being about 8 or so, washing clothes for the family. And I learned how to cook early. So, you know, I learned how to cook as early as 8 or 9. And being someone who grew up in New York City, I also learned you know, I became very independent. All my siblings and I became very independent early. We were used to taking public transportation to school, you know, getting on the busy trains of New York City. The other and very important area that I learned how to become a parent was also from the Bible and from my church that I was involved in with at that time, as well as Christian parenting books. Oh, I read a lot of books on how to handle certain things differently. You know, you have your terrible twos, and I didn't want to just take the approach that I had learned or had seen growing up, but, you know, I started to understand that even though the child is only 2 years old, you know, that they have their personality already. So some of those traits that you're looking at are traits that are going to be with them for the rest of their lives. And no matter how many spankings you give, no matter how many times out, you know, there are certain traits that are just going to be there. I always laugh at my baby sister because when she was 2, if I may just share this quick story, when she was 2, I had said she was in the kitchen and she, you know, was playing around and I had moved her away from the stove and the stove wasn't on, but, you know, I didn't want her near it. And she kept going into the refrigerator and pulling things out. And so I would put them back and I said, no, don't go in there. So she did it again. And the second time I said, no, don't go in there. I said, do not touch the refrigerator. And I tell you, she looked at me square in my eyes, lady, and she had to be maybe about, you know, 2 feet tall, but she looked at me, and she took her hand and placed it maybe half an inch away from the refrigerator and looked at me like, what are you going to do? I'm not touching it. You can't touch me. You can't do anything. And I said, oh, my. And, of course, you know, I spanked her and I set her down and I talked about the fact that, you know, she needs to respect me. She needs to respect authority. And I tell you, that's been a theme, you know, just throughout her time growing up. Now, needless to say, she's doing awesome today. But that character trait, I had learned that it's a good character trait that she's very strong-willed, that she's an independent thinker, and that she was able to associate just that quickly that, okay, you know, I'm not touching it, so technically you can't do anything. But the heart behind it was that she still was going to challenge what I told her. So, you know, it was just, again, through the parenting books, through talking to, you know, just different older women in my church and some of the brothers as well who were fathers, and as well as just, you know, talking to close family friends and a lot of prayer. That's how I learned how to become a parent.
Yeah, that when you said about the church and school, it was the community helping you raise your children.
Yes.
Because that would have been extremely difficult without any support to not only go to school but to help with four kids. That would have been a tremendous impact on you had you not had that support.
Oh, that's very true. And I also, you know, my brother, like I said, he was 15, but, you know, he was also just a team player. One of the things that I don't know, the philosophies, I guess, for us as a family unit was that we would do family devotionals, and a lot of those devotionals, we would do those once a week, and a lot of them centered around team and help and support. And so we often looked at things as a team, and my brother, oh, I owe him, you know, without him, I know I definitely would not have graduated because, you know, he wanted a job after school, but instead, you know, he wouldn't work, and, you know, he would make sure that he was there to meet the kids after school or, you know, made sure that their homework was done. He became a great cook because of it, because he also helped me make dinners. So it was really just a team effort. And even with the kids and their chores as they got older, you know, they looked at it, their part of pitching in, cleaning the house, you know, keeping the house clean. And we really just became this team. And the whole idea was for all of us to help so that I could graduate and so that we could have a better life.
What about your two siblings who weren't able, the other sibling who wasn't able to go with you? Where did they go?
Oh, my sister and my other brother, they decided to stay in New York. And my sister eventually, in New York City, my sister eventually moved to the area that we had lived in New York. She wound up going to school, and I'm so proud of her. Actually, she's a nurse right now, so she's going through her certification, yes. And my other brother, he currently lives in Massachusetts. So, you know, they turned out fine, but they wanted to stay in New York. So they decided
to stay with
family.
How old were they when your mom died?
Yeah, let me see. My sister was 18, that brother was 15. The brother who came with me was 16. So the brother that stayed in New York was 15, and he stayed with one of my mom's close friends down in New York City.
Okay. But one question, how did it impact them from when your mom's death to having to leave your mom's house and having to move to the campus with you in a totally different environment? How did that affect your teenage brother? Because he left his friends and left the neighborhood that he knew. How did he react when he had to do that?
You know, actually, he reacted quite positively. What I did was, just to break it up for the audience a little bit, our age range, there were six of us. The first four of us were pretty much what you would call like steps. So we were roughly about a year, year and a half apart in age.
Okay.
And then there were the two younger ones that I talked about, the one that was two and then the one that was six. So when my mom passed, for the older ones who were teenagers, basically I put it as a choice to them because I didn't want I wanted them to understand that if they were to come with me, that I needed help. So, you know, it would be an opportunity, you know, and that they would be able to do great things, but that they would have to come and help. That would be the understanding because I would be in school. So I couldn't really do a lot of the extra things or pretty much do like what my mom would do. I couldn't be their parent as well completely. You know, it would more so be a support. And I would need their help with the younger kids. And my brother, who was 16 at the time, he came with me, and, you know, he said that's what he wanted to do. And my other brother, he just really wanted to stay in New York. He didn't want to move out of the area. Needless to say, that wasn't necessarily hard for my brother who came with me, just because we lived in Harlem. We didn't live in a nice area of Harlem. So it wasn't, and where we were moving to was nicer. Or where the university was nicer. So for him, it was kind of a no-brainer. But it was culturally challenging, though, because it was different. It was completely different. But he got to do a lot of great things he wanted to do. He's always wanted to be on the basketball team, and he wound up doing really well for the centralized high school basketball team. And, you know, he got to go to dances and things like that that you don't really get to experience when you live in an urban situation sometimes.
Yeah, so that opened up a lot of new opportunities for them that they wouldn't have experienced had they stayed in New York.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I could just picture that being so different, leaving mom's house and going to live on a campus with a lot of different people, because on campuses is multicultural. I mean, you might run into somebody from Japan or somebody from Portugal. It's got to be just mind-blowing to the people that you'll meet.
Mm-hmm.
So for some young kids coming from that area of New York to moving to an area where there are people that, you know, from all aspects of life, it just had to be exciting, but a little bit like, oh, my goodness, where are these people coming from? It had to be a little bit interesting, but a little bit like, oh, in awe at all, and sometimes by the different types of people that they met.
It was exciting. It was absolutely exciting because, I would have the kids with me on campus. Anyone who knew me, you know, I was known as, the student with the kids, because if I was at a meeting and my brother couldn't watch them or one of my close friends couldn't watch them, then they were there with me. And, you know, they were well-trained, so they knew to be quiet and, you know, to either work on their homework, or they had activity books or coloring books, and I would assign them work that they had to have done by the time whatever function I was doing was over. And people would always comment about how well-behaved they were and how well-mannered they were. But they loved it, because being on a college campus that was internationally renowned, they got to go to Indian festivals and, Malaysian culture events, and Latino culture event, cultural events, and all types of Asian culture. I mean, it really opened up a world of possibilities. So they got to experience a lot of things young that other kids their age weren't experiencing.
Tell us, before we go, tell us about that story about, was that your sister or your daughter that was in the class with you?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. As a chemical engineering student, you have to take organic chemistry. And believe me, everyone, it's just as hard as it sounds, and slightly boring as well. So my daughter was with me and my best friend in the lecture hall. And if you can imagine, it was a semicircle lecture hall, about 150 students. And the professor was up in front going on about bonds, and he talked about a Gaussian curve, and he's talking about these different connections and things that need to be made. And my daughter was sitting there nice and quiet, and, you know, she's drawing these circles. And unfortunately, I was asleep, because I was just asleep. I was up the night before, and unfortunately that class was so boring to me, it was hard to stay awake. So somewhere I had dozed off, and so had my best friend. Well, next thing you know, we wake up to this thunderous laughter and applause. And, you know, I look, and my daughter is standing there with her hand up. And the professor laughed, and everyone was laughing, because the professor had asked if anyone could draw a Gaussian circle or a Gaussian curve as an example. He wanted them to come down to the front. And so, of course, none of the other students raised their hands, because they were just about as lost as I was. But my little daughter, 4 years old, is standing there with her hand raised, and she's like, "Mommy, I can draw it." And she, like, has a circle drawn on her paper. Oh, wow, it really endeared the professor to me and just everyone in the class. So now everyone looks forward to her being there. They didn't realize she was there until that happened. I had been bringing her with me for pretty much the whole semester. But, yeah, he said, ladies and gentlemen, the youngest chemical engineer that I've ever taught, you know, and everyone was clapping for her, and her face got all red. But she honestly just wanted to answer the professor's question. So that was an interesting story.
Well, he knew that no one else was listening, she was.
Excuse me. We have a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Are you there for the question?
Yes. Well, it's more of a comment.
Okay,
the young lady that you have on the phone is a very good friend of mine. We work together with OSHA. We work together as president and vice president of the county NAACP. She's the greatest person in the world. I know two people that are smart, Hillary Clinton and Yvonne Gonzalez. They're the best.
Well, thank you. She loves that. Thank you for calling. Do you have any questions for her?
Yvonne,
or anything about the show?
Yvonne, you made this show a very successful program this morning. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
That's great.
All right, we have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Hello? Caller, are you there? Hello? We have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there? Okay, I guess they're shy. They're not wanting to say. They're not talking to us. But we thank them anyway for listening in and for calling in to the show. Okay, Yvonne, you know what? I was listening to you as you were telling your story about your sister and the refrigerator, or your niece, or whomever that was. You know what I admire the most about that story is the fact that you taught her about respect and about how to respect authority, because today kids don't have any respect for authority. They're not being taught, you know, who you should respect and what you should do in, you know, different situations, or what to, you know, how to react to things that when the authority is telling them what to do. And that's one of my pet peeves today. I might be wrong or incorrect, but I feel that these children today are not getting taught moral values or respect from any parent. The only people that they can probably get it from is the teachers at school. And I think that should start at home. And I really wanted to make the comment and tell you that I admire you so much for doing that, because I bet that took her a long way.
Oh, it did. It definitely did. I mean, you're absolutely right. I agree. I think sometimes as parents, we, all parents, particularly in America, I think we're very you know, you need to be an independent thinker, you need to be a free speaker, and that's all very true. But I think we also have to teach our children when it's appropriate and how to do so. You know, as the kids got older, I would talk with them about, particularly in school, if they felt that a teacher was wrong or an administrator was incorrect, that, you know, you still do, you know, you do not yell at them, you do not curse at them, you give them that respect, and you just say, I respectfully disagree. If they say, well, you know, too bad, you take whatever punishment they give, but you always ask to call your parent. You know, you don't take it on because you're not their equal.
That's correct.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
I feel like that if more more parents would do that today, you know, we would have a better society of kids today, because I'm just like I said, these kids don't know about respect. We were taught how to respect our parents and our elders and the people who were in charge of us. Good morning, caller. Are you on the line? I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have a new caller on the line. Hello.
Yes, I'm here.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great.
All right. Would you like to share something?
Are you still talking to Yvonne Gonzalez?
Yes, we are. Go ahead. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes. This is Nellia Hammer, and I'm a real good friend of Yvonne and Miss Everly, and I'm really, really proud about this program. And, you know, I am so glad to know that This is the first time I'm on the blog, and I'm so glad to hear about all of this that's going on. And, you know, I would like to be a part and help in any way I can.
No, it's the show. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you would like to be a part of our organization, you can go to www.grannysplace.org and sign in and look at our website and check us out. And we have a space on there where that you can contact us. And if need be, you can contact me. My contact number is 214-505-3447. And I'll be glad to talk to you and get acquainted and tell you what we do.
That would be great. And, you know, I'm glad you have Yvonne on there because she is a great person. And so is Ms. Beasley. I love them both. And God bless you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Nellie. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Have a wonderful day, and we thank you for calling. As we wind down, our time is winding down. We have a few more minutes to talk to anyone who would like to call in and share, or if they would like to have questions for Ms. Gonzalez or Ms. Beasley or I, and any comments that you might have, ladies, go right ahead. Feel free.
Oh, I think this is, delayed.
Okay.
Well, I just want to thank Yvonne for coming on and sharing her story. I asked her to come on because I wanted to let other women, young women, know that that are young parents, that because they become a young parent at an early age, maybe 17, 16, whatever, that they still can accomplish their dreams. They can still go on to college. They can still do the things that they want to do in their life, and they can teach their child as they grow how to become, that they can achieve their dreams. So I that's the reason I wanted Yvonne to come on.
Okay. Is there no, they hung up. Okay. Well, we thank you for coming on this morning, Yvonne. You have really been enlightening to us, and I look forward to working with you as we get together on our after-school program. For just to let the listeners know, Granny's Place will be hosting the Shane Hart Mentoring Program, where we are developing an after-school tutoring program for the children in Duncanville area at the First Free Will Baptist Church. We are in our beginning stages right now, and we will be bringing you more information on that as we finish our developing. And Ms. Gonzalez and I and Brother Jaron are working on plans now to get that up and started. So look forward, people in Duncanville, to getting your kids educated. Also, we're going to be instilling some of the moral values and some of that respect, teaching them about that. And you'll be more than happy and grateful for that.
If I may, ladies, can I just – I would also just like to thank you guys for having me on the show. It really was such an honor, and I'm willing to do this anytime, any way that I can share my story or any knowledge or information that I have with any of the listeners out there. My motivation for doing this was hopefully just to encourage someone. But I also want to continue to encourage people. One of the things that my husband and I feel closely, strongly about is college education. And please, just follow us or check us out on Facebook and Twitter. The address is on Facebook. It's Finish in Four. That's FINISHIN 4, the number 4, both at Twitter and at Facebook. And just follow us. You can see what we're about. We're going to be launching our first ebook in March. So join us, join the conversation, and you know, please continue to help us because I know education changed my life. So it was one of the facets, and that's what I hope to do in paying it forward to the rest of the youth out there.
Okay, Yvonne, would you give us that address again and the information that you provided? I think we had a caller dialing, so could you tell us quick?
Okay, sure. I'm sorry. On Facebook, you just go www.facebook.com/finishin4, one word, and it's finish, I-N, and the number 4. So that's Finish in 4. And it's the same on Twitter as well. So you can go to Twitter and follow us and hear our and see our tweets. But the book is due to be released in March. We're going to release an e-book, a Kindle e-book, in March.
All right. Thank you so much, and we appreciate you joining us this morning. And God is so wonderful to us, and I would admonish you to continue to pray for Granny's Place and its success, and we will be praying for you. Now, with bowed heads, we're going to say, Father, thank you for this day. Gracious Master, we are so grateful for the opportunity to spread your word and your knowledge to our people, our listeners today. Father, help us and help us to with your will and to do the things that you have us to do to help your people, God. Father, continue to walk with us and give us strength and courage throughout our day. And Father, we just ask these blessings in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Y'all have a wonderful day. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.